You're listening to Boston Strongcast, a place where we talk all things powerlifting, strength, and the occasional scientific nerd session. I'm your host, Kevin Kahn, the owner of Precision Powerlifting Systems, strength coach and competitive powerlifter in the USAPL. Thanks for tuning in, and let's get stronger together.
Hey guys, this is Kevin Kahn with Boston Strongcast. I'm joined today from an OG in the powerlifting world, Jason Beck, and we'll kick this off. I'll turn this over to you, Jason. Maybe just give a quick little background, because when I heard your name, I literally had no idea who you were, and then I looked you up on Open Powerlifting, and I was like, holy shit, this dude was putting up some fucking numbers back in the, you know, around the 2007 time period, give or take. And so maybe give a little background on like how you got into powerlifting and maybe some of your competitive meets and your best totals and stuff.
Yeah, sure. I was 12 or 13 years old. I started just training in my garage, my parents' basement. And I trained for a couple years. And then around 1995, I started training. I actually graduated high school with a guy named Travis Werner. I don't know. Does that name ring a bell?
It does not.
Okay. He's he's going to be the meet director, for the 2021 Collegiate Nationals.
Okay.
And he's the state representative for powerlifting in Louisiana. So I actually graduated high school with him. We were good friends. So we started training together and we did our first competition in 1995. It was a bench only meet. And so we spent our high school days, we'd play football and then we'd do powerlifting in the off season. And once I graduated high school, I ended up going to basic training for the Army and Travis went to Louisiana to go to college. So I joined the Army Reserves and when I came back home, I had to train by myself. So I ended up finding a local, I moved from the local Y to the local like hardcore gym. And they were all West Side guys. They all trained West Side. That was the big way to train back then. So I basically just spent a couple of years doing local meets. And I remember Travis told me one time, he's like, you know, the total you just put up beats the USA powerlifting junior American record. And he's like, on top of that, if you go to collegiate nationals, he's like, you can get qualified to go to the world team. And I was like, oh, okay, that sounds cool. I'll do that. So I never paid attention to federations. I would just do like local meets, you know.
What was your first total?
I have no idea. I couldn't. No idea. I started out in the 181s and I eventually around this time was in the 198s. So class I was in, but as far as
growing,
I have no idea. I couldn't tell you. In 2001, I went to Collegiate Nationals, USAPL Collegiate Nationals, and I won and I was invited to go to the junior world team. And we went to Bulgaria that year. So actually I was in Bulgaria during 9/11. The USA powerlifting team, the junior team was in Bulgaria at the time. So I competed in 2001 in Sofia, Bulgaria at the IPF juniors. I believe I placed fifth and I got a silver medal in the squat. So 2001, 2002, I won collegiate nationals in USA powerlifting. 2003, I was deployed to Iraq, so I didn't compete. I came back in 2004, and that was my first open national. So I won USA powerlifting open nationals in 2004, 2005, 2006, and 2007. In 2005, 6, and 7, I also was invited to be a member of the IPF team and competed at Worlds. 2005 and 2006, I took second. So I got silver medals both those years. And 2007, I believe I placed fifth. And I also, in 2007, got the gold medal bench. So I had the best bench in the world that year. 2007, my wife and I had our first child. So I decided that family was more important to me. Didn't want to spend the money to travel. It takes a lot of money to travel the world and compete. So I decided to try other things. So from 2007 till now, I've done different things. I spent a couple of years doing Olympic style weightlifting. I found a coach down in Virginia when I lived there, competed for maybe 3 or 4 years in that sport. I've done a strongman competition, and I haven't actually competed a whole lot since I moved back to Pennsylvania in 2014. And so now I'm just a meathead, man. I just train in my garage. Love training.
Those damn kids always pulling us away from doing the big stuff.
They only pull me away from the competitions. I'm a meathead till I die, man. I love training in my garage. That's what I do.
Hartman was telling me a story. Was it 2007 Worlds that you got food poisoning before you competed?
No, I remember in 2007 Worlds, I had trouble maintaining my weight though. 2007 Worlds was in Austria. So I remember I weighed like 230 pounds when I went there, and I would go to these restaurants, and people don't understand, like, when you go to Europe, the food portions are tiny compared to here. So I would go to restaurants and order like a full pizza, and it'd be like this little thin crust pizza that was appropriate as like an appetizer. And like, that was the meal. So I lost a lot of weight the week just traveling and the food portions, like I couldn't eat enough. But I didn't get sick or anything. It was hard keeping your weight up. And that's, I guess, one of the challenges when you compete internationally and you have to travel, there's things you can't really account for till you get there.
What are your best lifts in competition?
At 220, well, this is the old weight classes. I know the weight classes have changed. I competed at 220. My best squat was 810. I took eight and a quarter for a ride and actually lost my balance. My best bench in training was 6 1/4. I hit 625 touch and go at 220. In competition, I hit 595, and that was in 2007 at Worlds. And then my best pull was 765, and that was actually at 2005 Worlds. And I pulled that to secure the silver medal. That was my best pull ever. So my best total was 2127, I believe.
That was a pretty large total single ply for a 220 lifter back then, wasn't it? Because I feel some of those multiply lifters were just cracking the 2,000 pound totals.
Yeah, in the, bigger in the USAPL, that was the American record at the time. Was 2127. So yeah, that was pretty big.
So I was telling you this kind of before we started recording. So I went out to Columbus. I was training with Louis and his crew. And Hartman had made the drove up. Jeremy Hartman had made the drove up and drive up. And we were sitting there. We were eating breakfast. And I was sitting there and I was like, man, with the COVID stuff, like I can only get to the gym 3 days and kind of having like a hard time. Not a hard time, but like trying to like figure out how to schedule my training to still get all the work in that I need to do in those 3 days. And like I have specific days. So like I go to the gym Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday because of like all the restrictions and stuff. So like with limited rest in between days and all that stuff. So like that he had brought up your name and I was like, I have no idea who that is or whatever. And he shot me over what appears to be like what you were using in your training leading up to the bigger competitions and stuff. So it was a 3-day program. And the first thing that caught my eye was the bench. So you were heavily influenced by the Metal Militia crew, and the majority of the people listening to this are probably, I mean, I've had some multiply guys on here, but the majority of the people are probably USAPL, IPF. So they might not necessarily know who Metal Militia is, but they have a lot of big benches. And I found some things very interesting, like getting into the shirt a little bit later into the training session. And there was just a massive amount of volume on that one day for the bench stuff. So maybe you could kind of discuss the Metal Militia crew in general, how you got introduced to them, because Did you train with them for a little period of time?
No, actually never. And I don't even know if it was that popular of a program back then. It was something definitely I was aware of, and I experimented with variations of it. And I guess this is a lesson for everybody. Like I looked at it as like, well, these guys are like, they're multiplied. I don't believe they were drug free, you know? So I was like, well, I don't know if that program would work for me. So I tinkered with it for a year or two. And then finally I decided, you know what? I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to try it. And I did. And my Lord, I put like 50 pounds on my bench in like 6 months. I mean, it was unbelievable. And the only modification I had to make, and it was just, I felt like I was pretty in tune with my body. About every third week, I would limit the lower end days. So the way they structured it, they had 2 days of benching. They'd have what they called a lower end day and an upper end day. So they divided the movement into basically off your chest and then a lockout. And it was because of the bench shirts, you need to be able to lock out a tremendous amount of weight. So about every third week, I would just eliminate that lower end day to give myself a couple extra days of rest. But it was a ton of work. I mean, it was amazing though. I think I learned that, one, I think my bench for me personally, I can handle a ton of weight, a ton of volume, and just a lot of work. I can, it's hard to overtrain on the bench for me, I feel. So you would go in and you would hit like regular bench for sets of five or sets of three. Then you would hit regular bench for sets of three. And then you put your shirt on, and these are like rep maxes. So you're heavy. And then you put the shirt on and you'd work up to a heavy triple. And then I think after that, maybe rack lockouts. So by that time you go to the rack lockouts, like you were smoked. You had to just keep working. But then you come back 3 or 4 days later and you could hit another bench day. And man, it was super effective for my bench. And I think the biggest thing that they did in their philosophy was that if you want to get good at something, you practice it. So back then, if you wanted to get good at the bench shirt, you had to be in your bench shirt a lot. You had to practice it. It's not an easy thing. A lot of lifters today think that, well, you just put a bench shirt on and you're going to bench 200 pounds more. And it's not like that at all. You have to be a technician. It takes a lot of specific practice to be able to control it, but then a lot of specific training to make your muscles strong in the right places. So it's a lot more difficult than I feel a raw lifter who's never experienced gear would give it credit for. It takes a lot of time. And actually, I don't believe that I ever really got good at it. Even though I got the gold medal that year, I benched 30 pounds less at the competition than I did in training because I wasn't as technically proficient as I could have been. There was still meat on the bone, so to speak, to get better.
So when you guys were, that's so true about the bench shirt. Like I felt when I first got in a shirt, like I was benching way more weight. I'm like, wow, this is great. And it's going great. And then all of a sudden, like now it is by far the one that I struggle with the most. And it's by far the most frustrating. So when you were doing this program, cause like, I'm just thinking if I'm doing some raw bench before I'm getting into the shirt, my arms are going to be blown the fuck up and trying to get that shirt on is going to be brutal. Did you use like bigger shirts in training or rotate them around or how did that work?
I had a whole chest full of equipment. I was actually a Team Titan lifter. So, I had a lot of equipment. So I actually had some bench shirts that I could put on myself. And I more than one occasion, I actually benched by myself with a shirt. So I had shirts that were big enough I could put on myself and then train without anybody else being there. But even my competition shirts, they were tight. But at the time, I can't remember the name of the material. It was like the NXG Super Plus or something like that. Well, I used to call Pete, who was the owner of Titan, and I didn't like that. That material was too thick and robust. I wanted the older material. So he would actually make my equipment out of like their older material that was a little thinner and a little stretchier. wasn't quite as extreme. So even my competition shirt wasn't, I guess, the state of the art newest stuff at the time. It was the older stuff, and it was custom made for me. So it fit good, but it wasn't as tight as a lot of people would have thought. My squat suit and deadlift suit were the same. Actually, my deadlift suit was the same suit. I never got a new one. I always used the old one, just worked better. My squat suit, I never squatted in competition with a suit that I actually couldn't put the straps up myself if I had to.
I've actually heard that a lot from a lot of elite equipped lifters. So I have multiple sizes and stuff that I like rotate around in training. And so I typically compete in like a 44, which I can walk into pretty easy, but I have like a 46 that I'll use if I'm doing like deficit deadlifts or I'm doing like a lower box or something that, but I started to realize that the looser suit, I could actually lift more weight in for some reason. I don't know if it's like the speed on the way down, I'm able to just kind of like hit it a little better, stay in better positions and just lift more weight. And then I started paying attention when I was listening to like other people talk and stuff. And like, even like Dave Hoff doesn't wear something that's like super tight, even in the multiply world. But like Ed Cohn said the same thing, like he could just put his straps up by himself for most of his lifts. And I think his thing was he could hit the hole a lot harder in the looser gear. And I also heard Ryan Kennelly talk about like the old Phenoms, how they were made with the stretchier stuff. And that's actually what he preferred to bench with. And that's what he hit his like 1075 with, was a stretchier material, not the newer, thicker bench stuff that he feels it's actually harder to like maintain technique and do some other things. So it's like, it's interesting to hear, because it seems like in the equipped world, there's like two schools of thought where it's like tighter is better. And then it's get really loose, very easy to use gear, get really good in it, and then kind of like figure out what works best for your body structure and style of lifting and stuff as you go along. I'm curious, when you first started getting into gear, kind of what it was like making those choices, if most people just kind of wore looser gear, if tighter was better, if the same two camps kind of coexisted. I'm just kind of curious what it was like back then.
I think back then it was, I'd be lying if I told you I know what it's like now. I don't know I have no idea what the culture is like now, but back then, I feel like there was more crews. Like if you wanted to get into this, like you found a local gym with a crew of people and you went and you trained with them and that's the only way to learn. Like you would get with another group of guys that were into equipment and you would share equipment or share thoughts, and your coaches were your teammates, you know, they were your training partners. A powerlifting coach didn't exist back then. Like that wasn't a thing. So you just found a crew, and believe it or not, my first equipped meet, I trained raw and competed raw all through high school. And even when I started college, my first equipped meet was actually in a multi-ply competition. So I wore like a triple ply squat suit with the Velcro straps and the briefs underneath. And the first bench shirt I ever wore was double denim with a layer of canvas in between. Like it was as extreme as you could get. And I did that one competition. And then I decided to go, like I told you earlier, to USA Powerlifting and compete. So then I just started getting the single ply poly gear, and I just worked with my training partners. And I think what's important is I think with the equipment, you just have to be a technician. I feel like equipped lifters spent more time dedicating time to perfecting the technique, because you had to. If you weren't perfect in your technique, the squat suit was going to push you forward and you were going to dump it over your head. If the bench shirt, if you weren't a technician and it wasn't perfect, you were going to, the bar could literally crush your face. You could take it up over your face and it would crush your face, or go the other way and land on your stomach. So I think with me, and I never wore super tight gear, because once if it got too tight for you to maintain your technique, then it wasn't going to help you anyways. It was definitely not even diminishing returns. It just wasn't as good. You had to be able to control it. And that's not an easy task with a lot more weight than actually you can lift without it. So it was just honestly just years of trial and error. And it definitely helped once I became sponsored by Titan that I could call Pete. And I used to talk to him on the phone personally. And we discussed about how, okay, well, I liked it here, you know, tighten up in the hips a little bit more, but the straps were a little tighter, whatever, you know. So I constantly had new equipment that I could try, which was a huge benefit. It was just trial and error over years.
What were some of the things that you would use in training? So like for me, when I first started getting into gear, everybody's like, oh, just doubles and triples. And like, I had a hard time. Like I'd lock out that first rep, whether it's on a bench or a squat. And like, it would just throw me around so much that I was in such a bad starting position that doing like doubles and triples were extremely difficult for me in the beginning. But then I started like, kind of like what you did with Metal Militia. Just like, I was like, these West Side guys started raw. Then the equipment was very minimal in the beginning. So I'm just going to like use my suit bottoms and hit some box squats and stuff and like some deficit deadlifts. And like, and all of a sudden, like I started doing more singles in that stuff. And then maybe some back down stuff for reps with a little bit less equipment on or whatever I was doing. And it really helped like my technique, just like adding in some of that like extra stuff and like, you know, and it was like a trial and error type of process. And I didn't have a crew. All my lifters are raw. Nobody had ever even been in gear. And when I first started, I was with like a multiply crew. So I'd seen people get into gear and seen them lifting it, but it's a whole other different experience being in it. So I'm curious, kind of like, what are some of the things that you did to kind of like really hammer down that technique in the gear? Maybe you just started a little bit looser with easier equipment or whatever.
The big thing I think was, and if you've read anything, like Ed Cohen was still lifting when I started, and like that generation of lifters, and usually, you know, you would early in your cycles, you're coming to a competition, you just throw suit bottoms on, and that's what you worked in that day. And then a couple of weeks after that, you'd put the knee wraps on, work that. And so you ease into the equipment. And you know, by the time you got close to a competition, you finally had your stretch, you know, your full suit on with knee wraps, and it enabled you to acclimate to the equipment. But definitely, oh God, I remember the first week in equipment always was terrible. Like the thing was, the squat suit would throw you around, the bench shirt, it felt like you had a house on there, you know, like just felt like so much weight, like it was going to crush you. You just really just had to give yourself time to acclimate. And early, when I won the collegiate nationals and the first year I won open, I was a West Side lifter. Like that's how I lifted. That's how I trained. So, the way I did it was, you know, on the max effort days, that's how I would introduce the equipment. So, okay, we're going to do a max effort squat with the suit bottoms on today, you know, so that's how I slowly introduced it, with that style of training. And then later on, as I got away from the West Side stuff and more into the traditional, percentage based programs, it was more just traditional, more of getting in the equipment more frequently. And I think that's where the Metal Militia really opened my eyes, where I really feel like if I were to, I think if I were to have kept competing after 2007, I think I would have probably been in my bench shirt year round. I think maybe I would have taken some breaks here and there for a week or two, but I really feel like I probably would have been in my shirt year round, and I probably would have gravitated towards more time in the squat suit and knee wraps as well, for the same reason, to just practice and become a technician. Because I do believe that I still had room. I feel like I had a really good technique, but I still feel like it could have been better. Like I could have worked in it more. So I think that's the way I would have moved to, until probably raw became popular, because it wasn't a thing back then.
It's funny you say that, because that's actually what West Side does now, is they wear their briefs for everything. So whether they're whether they're deadlifting or squatting, they put it on dynamic effort, max effort, doesn't matter. They wear their briefs. So that's when I started like being a little bit more serious into it. I started getting lifters who were getting a little bit more curious. So I had one lifter who just competed in October and she had never been in gear before. And it's from the second she decided to buy it, she was in those suit bottoms all the way through. We took some breaks on the bench shirt. So one of the things I ran into for me personally, because I was trying to be in the shirt more often, but my elbows from, I was kind of stupid too. So I would do on my day one with my squats, and this is probably where deadlifting day one, like I saw in your programs, and I kind of wanted to bring this up anyways. So like I would throw some bands on a bar or like do a max effort with straight bar squat, some variation of it, but, and then the next day I'm in my bench shirt and all of a sudden my elbows were the size of fucking grapefruits. So I had to take like an extended period of time off from being in the shirt, and I'm hoping to get into it today and be a little bit, hopefully a little bit more fresh. But if I was like rotating bars a little bit with my squats or just being a little bit smarter with my day one squat stuff leading into the bench shirt stuff, I probably could have rotated it a little more efficiently. But I saw you did deadlifts on day one, and I'm curious if that was kind of one of the reasons so that you could kind of, your elbows weren't too banged up getting into the bench shirt.
No, honestly, the reason I deadlifted earlier in the week and squatted later is when I designed what I was going to do leading into a competition, you know, I started the competition working my way backwards. So for me, leading into a meet, I like to take my opening squat about a week out. So if I was squatting late in the week on a Friday, that would, if you know, the week out from a meet, that's about a week out. And then if you keep going in reverse, that would put your deadlift about a week and a half, almost 2 weeks before the competition where you're hitting your opener, your heavier work. So it gives me a little more time on deadlift to recover, you know, going into a meet. And then what I would actually do is, you know, I'd have deadlift on Monday, say bench on Wednesday, and then squat Friday. And then a week out from the meet, if you loop around, instead of doing deadlifts on that Monday, that's when I'd hit my bench. My bench would be the closest to the competition. Yeah. If you're under, I don't know if I'm explaining clearly.
Oh, yeah. We literally do almost the exact same thing.
Yeah. So my bench would be like Monday, going into a competition on that Saturday. That'd be my opener. I'd hit an opener. And then maybe like that Wednesday before a competition, I'd just come in and literally just do a warm up, like whatever I was going to do warming up for squat, just to get the joints moving and really no load. But just get my body moving and keep it loose. So that was actually the whole reason why I structured the program that way. But honestly, I never had problems with my elbows. So maybe it was because I was giving myself extra time between the squats and the bench, you know, a little extra recovery time. Maybe that was one of the reasons.
Yeah. And I could have been smarter with like my accessory work and stuff like that too. Like I just, you know, I come in and hammer out the bench and then maybe like half-ass some accessories on another day or, you know, so there was other factors there and stuff.
One time in college I started having elbow problems and I didn't understand why for a while. And looking back, I remember I used to be able to do skull crushers with like 150 pounds, like just rep them out. It's like, oh yeah, no wonder my elbows hurt. Like that's a lot of weight on a skull crusher. Like it probably wasn't helping me bench anymore. Probably just making my elbows sore.
Well, that's the other thing too, right? And that's like one of the biggest takeaways I took from like hanging out at Westside for a few days was they're really smart with their accessory work. So, you know, if they're doing like high rep stuff to failure, it's like banded press downs, like something that's not really like crushing your freaking elbow. So one of the things that Louis had me do is just like 8 rollbacks and then into the banded press downs to get to the failure. So it's not like I was taking the tricep rollbacks or a skull crusher, like you were saying, and just crushing my fucking elbows, taking that really heavy. It's, I'm doing some heavy work there, but then just kind of like finishing myself off with something that's not going to beat me up too much. And that was literally like one of the biggest takeaways that I took from there is like how you can be smart and still like train hard and not have that like that extra stuff just kind of like wear you down like that? Cause that was definitely happening to me for sure. You know, go ahead.
I was actually, you kind of answered the question. I was just going to ask, like you spent a week at Westside training with Louis?
Yeah, I did 3 training days there.
About a month ago. If you had to say like the one thing that you learned from that place, what would it be?
I think it's one of the things that you kind of alluded to earlier on, like finding a crew. Like, so when I went in there, so the band tensions just picked off of the strongest lifter in the group. So, you know, there was like 250 pounds of band tension. I walk in there and it's like in the monolith and then these two giant foam pads standing next to a box. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? And so like, there's a couple of things that like had happened here. So like, I'm like, oh, maybe they were using those to squat. No, I'm standing on these fucking foam pads all over the place with more band tension than I've ever had on my fucking back. And one of the things that I realized is, you know, when I was talking to him, he's like, if you're the weakest one in the group, it doesn't matter what the band tension is because you're going to get stronger from trying to keep up with the strongest person in the group. And there was something to that. So like by the end of it, I did a set of 10 with like 295 pounds of bar weight plus the 250 in band tension. And that's like way fucking more weight than I should have done. But it's like Louis yelling in my ear. And there's like these guys from Westside. I'm not about to like bitch out on a squat set because this guy won't fucking talk to me for the rest of the week. So it's like one of those situations where it's just like, I'm probably not working hard enough in the gym. And even though, you know, I did the pro MMA stuff for a little over 10 years and just having like a group that like really freaking pushes you in the gym, there's just something to be said about that, like no matter what the situation is. And I think that just kind of like reignited that, like that group mentality. But at the same time too, they get into their gear really quick. So I took the empty bar with the bands and then I was in my gear and they were in their briefs and they walked into their briefs. Like it didn't require, when I was in the gym before, it would require like 4 people to get them into their freaking briefs for the multiply guys. But these guys just walked right into it. They got into their briefs as fast as I got into my oversized Centurion. So getting into it sooner, being in it more often, and just like making sure that it's not super tight. It's something you can move with good technique. And he made me retake weights multiple times until my technique was a little bit better. And then we started loading it up and they were able to do, so we did 5x5 squats and 5x5 deadlifts. I got there. I mean, we started at 5:30. I think it's what, I forget what time it started at 5 a.m. because I was in the parking lot at 4:30 in Louis' Jeep having a conversation with him. So at 5 a.m. we started lifting. I was sitting down at TJ's with a cup of coffee and my breakfast in front of me by 6 a.m. and we did those 5x5 squats and 5x5 deadlifts. So there's just something about like you can do a lot more work in a short amount of time than like what I think we typically do, where he was kind of making fun of Jeremy's lifter being like, I know anytime an IPF lifter comes in here, cause it takes him 2.5 hours to freaking do a set of squats. And it's like, that becomes me at times. Like I'll take like 15 minutes shooting the shit, talking shit with some of the people I'm lifting with and just like having a good time. But you know, it's having more of that like professional mentality of going in, get your work done and getting out type of thing, but still having a little bit of fun in the middle of that. And I think my biggest takeaway too on the bench is just, so we start the 5x5s that they're doing for the dynamic effort stuff. And that was fucking hard for me. And even the dynamic effort stuff, it wasn't as light as what you typically see for, like when you read about it on the internet, it's like, oh, it needs to be like really fast. Like these guys were straining towards the end of this stuff. And like, it was a lot heavier than I even imagined in my head. And I had read like about Kenny Patterson and George Halbert and stuff doing on those max effort days, they'd hit a certain point and then they'd start putting moderate to heavy weight on there to practice that speed under the heavier loads and stuff. But it still kind of caught me off guard. So I hit that 5x5 and it was pretty hard. And my arms were kind of smoked towards the end of it because there was a lot of band tension for me to be doing raw. And then we're doing some like 2 fingers on the smooth close grip stuff. So I kind of like, I unrack the bar and I just do the amount of reps that the guy before me had done. And like, they all just start like, they're like, what the fuck are you doing? Take that bar out. The work doesn't start until it starts to get hard. And I'm like, these motherfuckers want me to go to failure or something. I was like, there's nobody even standing behind me. I'm going to fucking drop this shit on my face. But I was like, all right. So it just made me realize that, like, you know, it's not necessarily about like, basically I could be working a lot harder than what I am at the stuff that I was doing instead of just being like, oh, 5x5 and just kind of like, I was going through the motions without thinking I was going through the motions. I think that was my, my biggest takeaway from that. And I think not having a crew that holds you accountable at times, I think, and that's why it's so important. I don't know if any of that stuff makes sense to like your training back in the day, like with 100%. Your crew.
I remember, well, I've been to Westside one time. I went, it was actually maybe 3 years ago. He opened up the gym for the Arnold weekend. And, I live just north of Pittsburgh in Western Pennsylvania. So, it was 3 or 4 years ago. I can't remember. It was quite recently actually. And I drove out, I didn't even go to the Arnold. I drove out to train at Westside for the morning. So I drove out and, I didn't train with Louie or anything. I just trained in the gym. And Louie eventually showed up and his passion and love of just sharing information just is palpable when he shows up. But what I learned from that gym, and it's something I think I already knew, but the place is pretty Spartan. He talks about machines all the time. He doesn't have crap for machines in there. He's got a lat pull down that didn't even work when I was there. Like the cable was all tied in a knot and the dumbbell section, like good luck if you want to use dumbbells, because like if you want to find a 100-pound set of dumbbells that match, like it's going to take you 20 minutes to find the two 100s. Cause it was literally a mountain of dumbbells piled up and they
had on the floor
in front of the dumbbell rack. And then I think what stood out to me is there was nothing on the wall. It was like a white painted shitty brick wall. The only thing he had hanging up was the record board. So like, you can tell, like that's the only thing that matters is the numbers. And it's all about attitude. And I think that's what, you know, people that don't train in a crew now and rely on, you know, training in the garage by themselves and hitting videos for Instagram is that attitude. Like when you were talking about when they were like, no, you're not done. That's the magic of Westside, that they get those crew there. It has nothing to do with the sets and reps or anything. It's the attitude that they come in with. And I remember when I started training, I trained at the Y when I was a kid. And then, you know, Travis and I went our separate ways. And when I went down to the hardcore gym, I remember the one guy in the crew, I was pretty new to the guys and I was about 198 pounds then. And he was a 275er. And I remember when I first showed up, I could out deadlift him. And a couple of weeks went by and he we'll just say he got on his creatine and he outpulled me several weeks later. And I remember just telling him like, yeah, but you outweighed me by like 100 pounds. And he got right up in my face with a big smile and he just yelled. He's like, that's right. I'm bigger and I'm stronger than you. I'll never forget that. But he just laid down the law like, hey, there's no excuses in this crew. Like you put up the numbers. That's what's important. And there's no excuses. There's no explanations. You put the numbers on there and you do what it takes to put the numbers on there. You just work hard. And I think that's the magic of working in a crew, that they, like you said, they hold you accountable and they, you know, you don't want to stop. Like, man, I can't stop. They're going to be all over me, man. You know what I mean? Like you got to work hard. And that's what it all boils down to. And boy, is that fun. Like, I don't know. That's just great times, man.
And that's what it is, right? It is fun. And it builds this, like, this camaraderie and this, like, that's actually how those, like, bonds are formed, right? You just know, like, when you have one of your dudes in your corner, when you're, you know, about to go out to the platform or whatever, just, it gives you that extra, like, I guess that extra confidence to be able to, like, you know, if they're there and they're like, oh yeah, you got this. And like, you trained with them hard over a period of time like that. And it's like, it does, it gives you that little bit extra of a boost when you're going out there to do something, you know, you may not necessarily have that confidence without. And just like, there's something too about, And I say this with my group all the time, like learning to compete is a skill. And there are plenty of people who are strong in the gym or in any sport, right? They're awesome in practice, but the second you go out there in competition, you know, stuff's moving a little bit faster. You're not going on your own accord. So there's adjustments that need to be made. They just lack the ability to actually compete. And so like, there's just something too about having a group and just learning to compete in the gym. Cause at the end of the day, that's literally what you're doing. Like, you know, squat, bench, and deadlift, powerlifting is powerlifting. It's not like there's a defense that's confusing you or anything like that, but you're still competing. You're competing against yourself. You're competing against your negative emotions at times. You're competing against your opponents. And it's just like, there's just something to be said about like learning to compete. And I think not having a crew and also like a change of training styles. Like that's one of the things that I like about like a West Side template is you learn to compete by putting a heavy single on there and like having other people in that group doing the same thing. Where if you're just always doing this, you know, and I, my first 3 years in powerlifting, I was coached by Shaco. So I literally didn't take heavy stuff often. And so like, if you're just stuck in that like 70 to 80 range all of the time and you're just not used to competing and you have no competitive background, that skill is hard to develop without actually doing that type of stuff in the gym. And I think that's something that's just kind of lost. And like the current powerlifting culture is just everybody in their own rack with their SBD sleeves of different colors to match their moods for a given day. And it's just, it's opened up the world to more lifters, which I think is absolutely great. And I wouldn't have a job today as a powerlifting coach if it wasn't for stuff like that. But it also like, you lose that aspect. And I love hearing like the stories of like lifters who grew up with the sport and like having those crews and like the stuff that they fucked up and like realized that like, oh yeah, these people that were doing it for a long time before me, they kind of figured all this stuff out beforehand. And like, I don't know. I hope it gets back to being like that at some point. And I think it will, cause everything kind of like swings around and stuff. And I don't even know where I'm going with what I'm trying to say, but find a group and utilize them, train hard. Like, I think there's such an emphasis on the program that people do and they lose out on that aspect of it. And I don't know if you have anything to add to that part of it.
Yeah, I think everything works. I think if there was one superior way to do it, that's how all the top lifters would be doing it, right? So I think the program you follow has to mesh with your personality. It has to be something that you enjoy and you get amped up to and excited to go do. Cause I hate to say it's a grind, but literally like it took me 10 years. My first competition was in 1995. My first open national win was in 2004. So that was 9 years after my first competition. It takes a long time. It takes years. So like, I would say, you know, if somebody would ask me, how do you get a world-class squat? I would say, go to the gym on Monday and squat. And then next Monday, go to the gym and squat and do that every Monday. Don't ever miss a Monday for 10 years. And you're going to have the biggest squat you're capable of in 10 years. I don't care what you do. Just squat. You're going to figure it out. So I think, you know, the important thing, and I don't know where I'm going with it either, but I think when you get with a group of people and you learn to compete, that's where the magic happens. So here's an example. I was going to do a competition in March of this year, 2020. So I've trained in my garage by myself for almost 20 years now, but I live about an hour north of Pittsburgh. So when I was going to do the competition in March, it of course got canceled, but early in the year, I started driving down every couple of weeks to a gym in Pittsburgh. I don't know if you know who Ryan Selle is, but he was a big, huge powerlifter in the early 2000s, and he owns a gym in Pittsburgh now, and they have a group of powerlifters that gets together 3 days a week and they train. So I started driving down once or twice a month to get a squat workout on with those guys, with that crew. And there's just something that happens when you get with other people that I can't even put my finger on it, but that's what makes you better. That's how you get better. And I've been doing this for, I don't know, 20, 25, 26 years competitively. And I still want to go down and I wanted to learn from how they do things. And you can always learn and get better. And hopefully I would make them better. And that's, it makes the whole group better. And I just feel like if I decided I wanted to get back into powerlifting seriously at a national level, I couldn't do it by myself in my garage. I'd have to find a crew. You know, that's how you do it. That's the only way I know how to do it.
Yeah. I don't think I could do the occasional day here and there, I think, by myself, but to like really push myself, there's something too, like knowing that I literally am paid to coach the group that I train, that like pressure's a bad word, but if they're looking at me and I'm bitching out on a set of something, I'm not pushing it as hard as I should be. I'm not making the right decisions. Like there's just like that pressure of like, I got to lead that dance a little bit. And even just having them there in that room, knowing that I got to set the tone at times for them to train harder and them to get the results that they want. And even like, it's why I post my lifts on Instagram. I am by no means the strongest lifter on my team, like not even fucking close. But at the end of the day, I want them to see me in there training harder than everybody else and like setting that tone for that aspect of it. And me, if I didn't have those people around to even put those thoughts into my mind, I'm definitely not going to train as hard as what I typically do here. Like I'm older. I played soccer through college. I did the MMA stuff afterwards. I've ripped muscles from bones. I've broken bones. I'm at the point where it's like, I'm older. My hair's falling out. I'm on blood pressure medication. Like, you know, so it helps keep me in the, like in the trenches and doing that and working hard. And like, I really like appreciate that aspect of it. And it's like, I was having this conversation with a couple friends yesterday, cause you know, somebody like, you know, being here in New England, somebody like Tom Brady, when he retires from playing football, there's a huge void there that needs to be filled and he needs to find something for it. And like powerlifting provides you with that like competitive atmosphere. You can train hard. You can do all the things you did in sports beforehand, but it's something you can also do. Like Dave Ricks is like 140 years old and he's still squatting like, you know, 700 pounds. You know, Tony Harris is carrying an AARP card and squatting a grand. Like it's a sport that you can still be very competitive in, and even in the open, like later on in life and stuff. And I think, you know, it's a really cool aspect of it. And like you said, like you can, even if you have to, you can do it alone in your garage and, you know, drive down to a gym every once in a while and train with some people and stuff. And I, you know, it's the first sport I've ever done in my life that I'm not good at, that I have to work really hard for. But I also have the background of understanding that it takes a long time. And I think what you said, like just show up every Monday for 10 years and squat and like, you'll get really good. And it's like, it's hard in this like instant gratification age where people see, oh, well, this person's been lifting for 3 years and they're breaking world record totals. And it's like, yeah, that's not the majority of people. The majority of people, like, you know, you started lifting at 12, 13 years old and you didn't break your first American record until, you know, almost 10 years later. It takes time. And, you know, I've heard other people say this, like Greg Panora didn't break his first world record for 14 years of lifting. Like it takes a long time to like build that base to be competitive at an elite level. Like what I try to tell everybody is, you know, I played soccer when I was younger and, you know, I've been lifting for 5 years now. So I started at 5 years old playing soccer. So I would have been a 10-year-old kid at this point in my career. Like by no means am I competing on a World Cup team at 10 years old, you know, and it's just like trying to put some perspective on it.
I don't know that anybody's goal should actually be, I don't want to say this the wrong way. I don't think your goal should be to be a world champion or to be an elite level lifter. I think what your goal should be is to be stronger than you are today. And if you keep doing that,
yes,
because everybody can do that. Like if you can squat 200 pounds, there's a number there. So your goal should be to squat 205 pounds and you can do that. Everybody can do that. That's within of certainly what's possible. What may or may not be possible is for you to become an elite lifter, because when I was competing at the IPF level at 220 pounds, if you go to a local meet and you compete in the 220s, that whole weight class comes in different sizes and shapes. When you go to nationals, everybody starts looking a little more similar. When you go to the IPF Worlds, the 220 weight class, I'm 5'8 on a good day with my shoes on. Everybody in the damn weight class was 5'8 on a good day with their shoes on. You know what I mean? Like, we all were shaped the same way. So unless, you know, if you're 6'3" and 150 pounds, you're probably not going to be an elite powerlifter. Not that you can't, but what you can be is 5 pounds stronger. So if it's meant to be and it's within your natural capabilities, you'll get there. But just concentrate on being better than you were last time. And I think, it was different back then. There was no internet when I started. There was no cell phones. You literally just had a magazine that came out maybe once a month. It was late usually. So you didn't have the information. So literally that's all you did. Like, we just go to the gym and train. And if the next competition, you wanted to be 5 pounds stronger than you were last time. And over years and years of being 5 pounds stronger than last time, I ended up being fortunate enough to travel the world and compete against people from other countries. And that's how it happened. But I never had a grand plan to be the best in the world. I worked my way towards that by just trying to be stronger than I was last week.
Focusing on the process instead of the external outcomes.
Correct. And now that I'm old and washed up, like, the process is what you need to enjoy, because that's where you spend 99% of your time. Like, literally, when you compete, like, I competed my last year, 2007, I went to Austria. I trained 3 or 4 days a week for a whole year. My training sessions used to be like 3 hours long. So 3 hours, 3 or 4 days a week in the gym, beating myself up. And then when you go to IPF Worlds, from the time you start squats to the time you finish your deadlifts, it might be 3 hours. Like, you're done. It's the same amount of time as one workout, and you just train for a whole year for that. So you better have enjoyed that year of training, because the competition's over in a heartbeat. Like, it's so fast. And then guess what? Well, you start training again for the next one. Like, that's how it works. So my Lord, enjoy your training. There's no other way to do it. You just got to enjoy your training, man. Love it.
It's so true. And like any elite, like I'm talking like professional athlete that I've ever had a conversation with, they were like, it's never the championships or winning the championships that mattered the most. It was all the things we went through up until that point that brings them back and keeps them wanting to do it. It was never, you know, I'll just use Tom Brady as an example here, but like when he's standing there holding that Lombardi trophy at the end of a year, it's not necessarily that moment that brings him back. It's all the moments leading up to that moment that probably keeps him playing at 43 years old or whatever it is. And it's so true. It's such a perspective that we focus on a lot with the group about enjoying training and focusing on the process, not the external outcomes, 5 pounds better at a time. And that's kind of how we run our max effort lifts, like beat it by 5 pounds, walk away. But I literally couldn't agree more with what you said there. And I think it's a fantastic message that everybody needs to like understand. Cause I think we have a problem in this sport of people just not lasting. Like, people come and go within a 5-year period of time, and you just have this like revolving door of lifters. You don't have like a lot of those older lifters sticking around. You know, where's that next generation of older lifter going to come from that like sticks around and passes those messages on and stuff? And I think that part I would like to see change as well. And I think that's a great place to end this on, is focusing on that process and make yourself a little better today than you were yesterday and set the stage right for tomorrow. Any final thoughts on that? Or
No, I think I laid it out pretty well. That's what I do now, man. I go to my gym. Actually, I'm in the gym almost every day. But as far as weightlifting now, powerlifting, It's just 3 days, but man, that's my time. I get like an hour, hour and a half every day to go out, and that's my time, man. I love it. Like, that's what I do. Even though I don't compete anymore, like I said, I'm just a meathead, man. That's what I enjoy doing. I think that's the way everybody should do it. Just, man, enjoy your training. If you compete, man, enjoy that. Just soak it all in. Enjoy it. Just, you know, have fun.
I think absolutely. I know you're not huge on social media, but maybe you want to give a little, if people want to watch your washed up meathead lifts at this point, they can do it on Instagram or maybe reach out to you if they have questions about this stuff.
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. I post every once in a while. Obviously, I don't know how to use it very well since nobody knows this, but you sent me a message like a month ago and I literally just saw it like 2 days ago. somebody else said, I don't know. I didn't even know it was there. And I just saw it 2 days ago. I was like, oh crap. Oh man, he sent me a message. Now I feel like a jerk. Like he's going to think I ignored him or something. Yeah, you find me on Instagram. I have an old YouTube that I haven't posted on in forever. I don't even know what it's called. You just look up Jason Beck on YouTube. You can find old videos on there. I'm not on anything else. But yeah, man, anybody ever wants to talk powerlifting or send me a message or whatever, man, just find me on Instagram, send me a message and maybe I'll see it in the next month or two and I'll get back to you.
I love it. Guys, you can follow me on Instagram. It's KW Can, our team, Precision Powerlifting Systems. Stay strong, Boston.